February is Black History Month, so this week we will focus on teaching for Black lives. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From USAtoday.com, Bible classes in public schools, why Christian lawmakers are pushing a wave of new bills. A wave of Bible literacy bills emerging in state legislatures would allow more students in public high schools to study the Old and New Testament.
Well, how about that?
Let's all read the Bible.
Well, it's Bible literacy, Bonnie. You understand?
Okay, explain what that means.
Until the news story came out, I did not know that there was a such thing as Bible literacy. I now know what it is an attempt to create the illusion that we're going to use the Bible and the Old Testament as some kind of text for critical reading, therefore making it allowable in public schools.
Okay. Because a lot of people get
you're not allowed to have that Bible in school. Yes, you are.
Yeah, you actually are.
And in fact, in a lot of social studies classes, we can really pull the Bible out. I used to do it a lot. It's great for teaching history. It's great for teaching issues of social movement. It's really cool text. Yeah. The problem is when I start teaching it, like, for example, the creation story in Genesis, right? I then pull out the creation story from the Vikings, and then I pull out the creation story from the Japanese, and then I pull out the, and then I lay them next to each other, and parents get really mad at me when I do that. Now I show that there are creation stories across, and that maybe some of these crazy, fantastical creation stories of other cultures are just as crazy as yours.
Okay.
So, Bible literacy. If they would truly mean we're going to now truly study the Bible, the Old Testament, as a text that could be critically analyzed. Great. This is not. In fact, in the title, it says Christian lawmakers.
Right.
Okay. Why are Christian lawmakers pushing Bible literacy? Why didn't it just say lawmakers? Well, somebody would say, well, that's USA Today picking on Christians. Whatever. It's Christian lawmakers. So when you read through this, pushing Bible literacy, this is just a blatant attempt to hide the real intent here, which is to make Bible reading part of the curriculum, which is a problem in public schools because we have a rule that says you are not supposed to indoctrinate kids into a religion.
Right.
Okay. People are like, oh, they've kicked religion out of the schools. Actually, no, we haven't. You're allowed to teach religion. Yeah. The problem is that most people don't know enough to actually teach about religions.
Right.
And so when they start teaching a religion, it becomes indoctrination. So if we're going to have Bible literacy, then we need all kinds of other literacies. Right. I would come back and go, what a waste of time. We don't need that because it's already legal to teach religious texts across the public school curriculum.
From CNN.com, an Oklahoma bill would revoke teacher certification if they walk out and protest. As the nationwide wave of teacher strikes keeps gaining momentum, an Oklahoma bill would make it illegal for teachers to walk out and protest.
Wow. So if they can't walk out and if they can't protest teachers because they're upset about things, what should they do then?
Well, the legislatures say that a much more effective way for teachers to voice their concerns is to contact lawmakers.
Oh,
that's so effective.
That's always been the way I solve all of the problems I have with things that bother me is calling my state legislator.
That voicemail does wonders.
Oh, my God. Thank you for your call, Mr. Slecker. We will forward this on to Representative so-and-so, and hopefully you'll hear something back, which is usually some form of a letter 5 weeks later going, while you have great concerns, I represent a vast amount of different people.
Right.
Therefore, I can't elevate your concern above theirs.
Sounds like you've done this before.
And I have. And I spend and I still do it because part of it is slightly my role is to go up here being locally, next to the Capitol here in Madison where we produce the show. I do run up, but I knock on their doors. Okay. And they're annoyed by that. But I will tell you, it's not a very effective way because you can be blown off so very quickly, which says, though, the person who is pushing this legislation, which is the quote that you just read, yes. Look, just call.
Call your legislator.
Striking, no protesting.
Just give us a call.
Give me a call. I am the person who wrote the bill that wants to revoke your license, and I am the person that wrote the bill that wants you to not have books. I am the person that wrote the bill that increases your class sizes. So when you have a complaint, call me.
Just call me.
Okay?
Because I'm sure it'll be handled immediately.
Right. But now, this is, you know, and people are sitting there going, yeah, but what about the kids? Right. You know, what about the kids? You know, they missed 3 whole days of instruction. Okay, I'm telling you,
important instruction. When the teachers aren't there, that's when people say it's very important that they're
in class. You know what? It's a pain in the ass because you don't have somebody to care for your kid. Okay, be honest, all right? And you're upset. And lawmakers, you're upset now because teachers are calling attention to the fact that you're being stupid and not doing your job, and you look stupid. So here we're going to now come after teachers, taking away their certification, which is interesting considering we're facing a nationwide teacher shortage.
Right.
So the way now we're going to even make less teachers by taking away their licenses, putting in more emergency license people, because that's always better for kids to have.
That's great.
Right? Okay, so now we're going to fire licensed teachers, replace them with substitute teachers with no licenses, and say, isn't life so much grander now because kids are sitting in classrooms with unqualified people to represent them, while teachers who walk out are wasting their damn time talking to idiotic legislators?
From thegazette.com, bill would ban abstinence-only sex education in Colorado schools. Democrats have proposed a controversial state bill that would get rid of abstinence-only sex education, which is taught in some charter and rural schools, despite a 2013 law calling for comprehensive sex education.
We need right now, first thing is first, though, is we need a vocabulary lesson.
Okay. True.
Abstinence-only education, comprehensive sex education, what's the difference? Someone might say. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Abstinence-only, first, let's be honest, let's put it out there what it is. It's say no. We teach you to say no.
And that's the only option.
Because it's clear that if you abstain, you won't have unwanted pregnancies, you won't have STDs,
nothing.
All that, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's guaranteed to work.
You'll be super confused, but you won't be pregnant. Okay.
Comprehensive says, you know what? Kids have questions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's help them answer those questions. In fact, some kids are going to go, I know I shouldn't, but I'm going to try. Let's at least show them or give them an opportunity to try without causing damage.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Right. So banning abstinence only. Why? Because it doesn't work.
We're talking about teenagers here.
And I said there are 3 measures on this, and it's been researched very comprehensively. So as much as people are saying, oh, you just have something against saying no, actually part of comprehensive sex education is a message about telling students that abstaining is your best bet.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
it's not that comprehensive says, hey, we're going to comprehensively teach you how to have sex.
Right. And we're not leave everything else.
Right. Okay. But abstinence only does not, and it's been proven all the time, does not reduce STDs, does not delay the age in which people start to engage in sexual encounters, and does not stop unwanted pregnancies. In fact, abstinence-only curriculum has shown that in those 3 measures, they actually go up. Okay?
Because we're talking about
high school kids. So some people are like, why are you all banning the abstinence-only? It's like, because this abstinence-only is not part of a curriculum that actually works. It's a curriculum that comes out of a fundamental belief that God and God's rule, and this goes back to the religious aspect, mm-hmm. abstinence-only education is pushed by right-wing church groups to say, this is how you should teach education or sex education, put it that way, not education, education about sex or sex education, whichever one you want. And it's like, okay, you can do that at home, but if you're going to go to a public school, one that receives taxpayer money, we're going to use curriculum that works. And yes, saying no works, but when saying no is not an option, comprehensive sex education rules the day.
We are Busting Pencils!
We are lucky we get to have Jesse Hagopian, one of the main editors of Teaching for Black Lives, back, actually on location. I'm able to grab you here in Madison.
No,
you're doing a speaking event about this. But, you know, the last time we talked, the book had just come out. What's happening with Teaching for Black Lives across America?
Well, thanks for having me back on Busted Pencils. Love to join you here. And since we last talked, it's been breathtaking to see this book catch fire across the country. And, you know, I've been speaking in different places all over. I just came back from the picket lines in L.A. And to get to speak about Teaching for Black Lives with striking teachers there was transformative. To hear how they are incorporating demands for racial justice into their strike demands that were ultimately victorious was really exciting. And, you know, we've really had this book be at the center of this Black Lives Matter at School movement. And the movement is what's so exciting to me, to see it start in Seattle in 2016 and then jump to Philly and Rochester. And now I'm right here in Madison with you, seeing the educators here have already sold 1,300 shirts that say Black Lives Matter, you know, and they are holding study groups here on the book. It's incredible.
Well, and I, you know, you look at this and say, when we talked, you know, when it first came out, you were saying that this idea of a movement, you know, can we get this to become a movement?
Right.
And it seems like now here we are, maybe 4 or 5.5 months since we did that interview. And as you said, you're in L.A., you're here in Madison.
Yeah.
You know, the teachers here, 1,300 shirts. Yeah. Is it movement time? Is it
yeah.
is it building? Is it built? Is it? I mean, like any movement, yeah. right? It's never really built,
right?
Or finished,
right?
But
something's off the ground, though.
Okay,
and that's what's exciting about this book. You know, it's not just book talks that we're doing or book signings that we're doing. It's movement building, and to see that we can have this book be part of helping to build that movement is exciting, and just seeing that it's taking a life of its own. That we had a webinar for Black Lives Matter at School on Friday, and to hear the litany of resistance that's happening across this country, the plans that teachers in New York and Milwaukee and Baltimore and LA and Bay Area, it's just spreading.
So What are some teachers telling you? I mean, there's the book, there's the content, but like good teachers, I mean, what are some of the ideas? How are they putting it to work that you're hearing?
And that's so fun to get the feedback of the study groups that are going on around the country. And there's so many different ways the book is having an impact. It's hearing from elementary school teachers that the lesson on brown kids can't be in our club was so vital to their practice because they had the same experience where a student said, "Your skin looks ugly." And now they have 7 different lessons in that one chapter about how to address that when it comes up, but also how to lay the foundation for talking about skin color in the class with young children before incidents like that arise that can be traumatic to kids of color. You know, hearing everything from that to folks who are using the articles on restorative justice to begin developing programs to end zero tolerance in their schools and really try to nurture the kids rather than punish them. That's just been exciting to hear.
And that kind of starts to move into like this space that I think, you know, early multicultural education and everybody had this idea of, quote, transforming the curriculum so that, you know, teaching for Black Lives, even though, again, it's going to be a week, but it's a book. But to say, I'm starting to hear this idea, though, of kind of saying it's not just a moment during
That's
a day,
right.
during a week.
That's right.
It's a shift. It's, you know, cliche, paradigmatic shift.
Absolutely.
You know. Resistance to the paradigmatic shift, though. Are you getting any of that?
Oh, yeah. You know, not...
You know, wait, but what, why are we teaching? What about my white kid?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Not as much as I originally had thought. I think that our movement is still growing, and there definitely will be some major pushback to transforming the paradigm right now that centers whiteness. You know, we've been really fortunate to have some strong union support that have helped alleviate some of the fears of teachers who are worried about what happens if they use this book or they teach Black Lives Matter lessons in the classroom. And so that's been important. There have been pockets of resistance, though. And, you know, unfortunately, the teachers union in New York City will not sponsor Black Lives Matter at School Week. And so the rank and file teachers are organizing and trying to change that. And so, you know, I think there's... We found a cachet of emails in Seattle from a couple years back of parents who wrote into schools and their school district saying this is politicizing the curriculum. And so that's definitely out there, and I think it's worth addressing, you know. And I think we just need to clearly say our kids are being politicized already. Right. They're being politicized by a president who's openly proud and racist. Right. Who calls Mexicans rapists, who says Africa and Haiti are asshole countries. You know, that politicization is happening in our society. You can see it with the rise of hate crimes across the country and on record numbers. And so what we're doing by teaching empathy, by teaching cultural competency, by teaching anti-racism, is correcting for a really hateful politicization that's happening in our society.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing. I hear that all the time. It's like, why do you have to get political?
Right.
You know, and yeah. as if, you know, what was or what was before, or of course, when I used to go to school, uh-huh. right, you hear that retort right. from people. We didn't do, you know, we learned to read and write, and that was it. And it's like, no, you don't understand. You were always part of a political structure.
That's right. I mean, it was neutral back
right,
then.
The systemic, you know, a public school system, and both you and I are massive public school advocates.
That's right.
But at the same time, to offer a critique of a system that is already highly politicized by the way it's done,
that's right.
that doesn't make us anti-public school. In that's fact, right. we're trying to rectify the fact that this is a system that has openly, in one, more than one way or another, said, you need to conform. You need to,
yes.
the old melting pot, whatever it is, right? You need,
yeah.
but you need to assimilate.
Right.
And assimilate, if you look at the curriculum, means white.
Yes, yes. And there's always been that tension in the public schools. On the one hand, they offer the potential for fully realizing each student's potential and building a democratic society. And on the other hand, they've been part of integrating the next generation of workers into a highly undemocratic, polarized, and unequal society. And they've been part of, I think, in this era, integrating Black children into prisons, really. And the school-to-prison pipeline is very real. We see the machinery of that being built in Seattle, where they're getting ready to build a $200 million youth jail. Actually, they're in the middle of construction on it, just a few blocks from my high school. And meanwhile, you know, we only have a counselor for every 500 students
right.
in our school, and kids who are going through problems, instead of using that $200 million to have counselors to help those kids stay out of trouble and deal with the trauma that they're going through, right? Instead, we over-police them and we ship them out to that facility. And that's what we're trying to change with this movement.
That's what I was going to say. And so we come back to the book, Teaching for Black Lives. I mean,
yeah.
we're gonna open that up
yeah.
for people to look at
yeah.
and say, look at this reality here.
That's right.
You know, and as you said, it disproportionately African Americans. But then even, you know, on the back talk you and I were having before we actually sat down here, when we say, well, what about, you know, white working class
Absolutely.
Kids, what do they yeah. find in this book?
Yeah, I think that our white students gain dramatically from learning the truth about black contributions to this country and black history and black struggles. Because I think that when we live in a society like we do today, where five people have the same amount of wealth as the bottom 3.5 billion people, that is such an atrocity that is causing, you know, health problems. It's causing inequality in education and housing. It's really the driving factor in so much oppression and exploitation in our society, that income inequality. And there's no way to overcome that massive gap in wealth if we're all divided. And racism is one of the key divides that keeps us all separated. And I think if we're ever going to challenge that fundamental inequality, white students are going to have to become champions of anti-racist education and policies in society. And we're going to have to figure out the many commonalities we have as all of us being exploited by the wealthiest 1% in this society. And I think that this correct curriculum holds the potential to actually unite people across racial divisions.
Well, he is the teacher from Garfield High School in Seattle. He is one of the editors of Teaching for Black Lives, and the movement is fully upon us. Jesse Agopian, thanks for Busting Pencils.
Oh, right on, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
Welcome back to Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Real Resistance Radio. It is now time to hear from the teachers. We heard about Jesse. We heard about the movement Teaching for Black Lives. I have with me
Ava Coleman.
Ava Coleman, and you are a teacher.
Yes.
Where?
At Barack Obama School of Career and Technical Education.
And what grade do you teach?
I teach fifth grade.
Okay. So Black Lives, Teaching for Black Lives. What does that mean to you?
So Teaching for Black Lives, to me, means that I am reaffirming who my kids are, because my class is 100% black. And so I have to build up their confidence. I have to reach back in time and show them all of the things that they are capable of doing, just from the examples that have been set by the people in the past who have brought us thus far. Mm-hmm. So,
when we talk about curriculum specifically and the idea of teaching for Black Lives, does that mean you change something that you normally do?
Oh yeah, when I see something in the curriculum that kind of sugarcoats a thing or kind of tries to change it up and make it seem a little like not...
Like those slaves that came as workers.
Right, okay. Like that. If I see anything like that, I stop everything and I tell the kids the truth. I graduated from Eastern Illinois University with my bachelor's in history, so anytime I see a historical inaccuracy or anytime that I see the glossing over of the tragedy that was the slave trade or Jim Crow or what have you, then I tell the kids the truth.
Anything special or specific you're planning for the week of action for Teaching for Black Lives?
After being here and listening to some of the things, I think what I am going to do is try to get my own kids activated and seeing where they could possibly be the change agents that we need to have. They can advocate for themselves very well, but they need a space to be able to be heard. And so one of the things that I did want them to do was looking at the things that they themselves can change in our community, in our schools, in our classroom, to see, you know, and give their own opinions and their own ideas and about what we can do and let them run with that.
Empowering social justice during Black Lives Matter. I
yes.
love it. You know, thanks for Busting Pencils.
All right. Thanks.
talking with more teachers, and we have with us...
Nobel Perez.
And you are teaching what?
I'm a bilingual teacher at an elementary school in Madison.
All right. So we are talking about teaching for Black Lives. When I say that, and you as a teacher hear that, what does that mean? I mean, what does that, how does that make you think?
To me, it means literally saving the lives of students of color and students who have been traditionally disenfranchised. To me, it means teaching in a way that makes us participate politically, that makes people of color feel included, that makes Black lives important in our schools, that we prioritize their needs, because in the way that we prioritize those needs, we are therefore prioritizing the needs for many other disenfranchised groups.
So it's there's going to be a week of action, mm-hmm. All right? And is there anything like a lesson plan, a specific idea you're working with that you're really going to say, like, this is going to be my contribution to the National Week of Action?
So along the things that I have planned for this week, I strongly believe in what we call building the field, so building that background knowledge. And I also like to approach this work in terms of doing anti-racist work within communities of color, because that's also different. Communities of color, for example, the Latinx community may be it's exposed to racism, and we have this understanding of top-bottom racism, but there's also work that we need to do within our community, within the colorism and the racism and the anti-blackness in our own community. And so that just has like a different, you know, there has to be some space to having these conversations and doing this work within that lens of doing anti-racist work within communities of color. So
it sounds like a challenge. I mean, that sounds incredibly challenging.
So one of the things that I did in starting to build the field was I have this book. I can't remember the exact title, but it's something about like the vanishing case of the golden frogs in Panama. This is an informational text, an informational narrative. And what I like about it is that the scientist is an Afro-Panamanian scientist. And so I had these, I started with crayons that had multicultural color, so they actually you have to get actually a different set to be able to get all like different colors and different hues for skin colors. And we started with asking the kids, I said, let's draw what a scientist looks like for you. Like, what do you think about it? When you think about the word scientist, mm-hmm. what do you think of? And so they all drew, and then we labeled, you know, with our drawing. And then I said, you know, label it with the color of the crayon according to the crayon you use for the skin color. Mm-hmm. And so my brown kids, like me, they all used peach.
Yeah.
Right?
Because all scientists are white.
Right. And so the next day we had this conversation and we started talking about that and we started, you know, reflecting of what that means. And a student said, you know, but in TV, you know, none of the scientists are black or brown, mm. right? And so we started having that conversation and what that meant in our communities, you know. I'm starting to approach the work from this colorism lens.
But I like what you're doing there. You take an informational text, which a lot of people would say is boring, is not very anti-racist, not very socially just, but then framing that already from the author and saying, look, here's a scientist who is not peach, mm-hmm. the peach color. And so I can't wait to hear more about what's going on. Thank you for busting pencils.
Thanks.
Busted Pencils, fully led at Education Talk. Black Lives Matter, National Week of Action. I'm sitting here with one of the organizers of this event. Mike, what's happening?
Doing all right. Feeling good. A lot of positive things happened today.
I think as an organizer, you have to be pretty impressed with what's been going on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy. I'm impressed, but I'm also, I don't want to say I'm not surprised, but like I feel like there is such a strong need for this work to be going on in our district, in our city, in our county. Like, we need to, in our state, that, like, I feel like we're just kind of meeting a need that was so desperate. It was just like people just need an avenue to explore it, and hopefully we can do some exploration together.
Well, I mean, one of the big issues, I mean, listen, about this idea of teaching for Black lives, I mean, what does that mean to you?
Well, I think what I believe, and I say this as a Black teacher, as a Black man, is that the affirmation that that Black children are just as valuable as our white children. And I can already hear, you know, those voices which say, well, of course they are. But saying it and doing it are two very different things. And there's a lot of systematic things that even as an educator myself, that are reflexes that we don't really reflect on reflexive actions that we do or say, or things that we think are best practices, which aren't, and then they actually disproportionately damage our children of color, our Black children. And I feel like this week is also not just a week of educating our children, but it's educating our adults, and for us to actually sit back and actually think about, what do I do to help my Black children? And is it like just doing this one action, right, or this one thing, or could I be doing more?
Well, that's my question to you now. Here, we're up to it. We've led up to it. So you're a teacher. Mm-hmm. You're a Black man. You're going in there. You're going to be teaching for Black lives. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking? For the teachers out there, give us an idea.
Well, I think one of the things I've been doing, especially as an organizer, like within my school, is just trying to share as much as possible. We have teachers that have and continue to do this work, and it's integrated in their curriculum, and it's been integrated in their curriculum for years. Calling out, but they don't sometimes are the ones that get called out to be models within professional development. They sometimes don't get called out to say this is what they're doing in their classroom because they might be doing something that doesn't fall in the canned curriculum that was given to them from on high. So they're kind of naturally rebellious, and then they get overlooked when it's like, here's this model of someone working well with our Black children. And I feel like we could use this as a prime time to say, okay, what am I getting from her classroom that I could apply to my practices? What can she do, or what could I do to share what I'm doing in my classroom to help out with this kid? I mean, I say this as a Black teacher. I have white colleagues who come to me and say, oh, can you help me out with Black kid A or Black kid B? And I'm a special ed teacher, so it's my natural proclivity to help, but it's also, like, are you asking me this because, like, I have some sort of expertise? Or are you just asking me this to, like, talk to the Black child because I'm a Black man? Mm-hmm. And I think it's, like, we need to empower and help all of our colleagues have the tools to work with all of our children, because sometimes they just shy away or say, oh, well, I don't get this kid's culture, so I'm just going to disengage. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they do it that explicitly, and they will tell me that. Sometimes they do that implicitly. They're just like, I don't know what to do. And even if you tell them what to do, like, or I think you should do this, or give them suggestions, they're still like, I don't know what to do. Like, it's kind of like, you know, I feel like this week could give them an opportunity to just, like, go and do it. Go. Make, you know, let's call it out. Let's do it. And if you stumble a little, that's fine. But chances are you're gonna make some progress building a relationship with that kid. And it'll help your practice. And by helping your practice, you're going to help so many other children of color because we're making teachers better.
Mike, you busted pencils.
We are busting pencils!
We are lucky to have with us two of the most amazing organizers in the world. Introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Jen Greenwald. I teach second grade in Madison.
And I'm Carrie Motivilaf. I am a teacher leader in Madison and past president of MTI, the union here.
And so we're just finishing an event that is the kickoff to Teaching for Black Lives Matter National Week of
The National Black Lives Matter at Schools Week of Action.
Week of Action, okay. It's wonderfully successful event. Jen, what did it take to organize the event?
Well, it took a little bit of asking certain people, like Tim Slecker, to be sponsors, and Tim was easy.
People who listen to this know that.
It took some logistical planning, a little bit of fundraising to get Jesse here, and then, I don't know, just lots of everybody talk to your own networks and get people
exactly.
to show up. And really, it feels like we put it out there and people came.
Mm-hmm. 200 people, let's just give it that number. Yep. 200 people Sunday in Wisconsin,
cold
minus
Sunday.
6 degrees, right? You get 200 people to show up.
Yeah.
How?
I think it just really shows that people are, you know, I keep using the word thirsty for this conversation. I think most of the room were teachers, either from Madison or the surrounding area. We had parents, we had community members, we had students, amazing students, some of which performed for us. I think it's the same thing as how I believe in any organizing. It's the power of the collective. Mm-hmm. And I think we're too often afraid to ask. And I think you said it really well that, you know, we're often just so surprised how many people are ready to say yes. So I just keep asking. We keep asking. Small group of people just asked. And there are very few people who said no.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So with you two now organizing the event, but now we're going to actually go into the week of action. Mm-hmm. What are you either hoping to see? What are you planning to do in your classrooms as an organizer? I mean, give me a sense of, you know, were you empowered by today to say, holy crap, I can't wait to.
Yeah, I was already fired up. I'm excited to bring real teaching for equity into my classroom. I mean, I'm already doing that. This was definitely inspiring. It's inspiring to see so many people who are thirsty, like Carrie said, and then it doesn't feel so much like I'm doing this on my own or I have to close my door and sneak it in. It does feel like movement building.
Yeah, I think that we're, it's like we have the critical mass enough that it might just move, hopefully this time, past a conversation, past activities and events into really identity work, which is really what we need it to be. We've been working to make this part of like the mission of the union, have teachers see this as part of their work, both, you know, in their hearts as people, in their profession as teachers, and in the union that represents them.
Well, I mean, Jesse talked about that, the union strand here in the organizing. Now, granted, caucuses and things like that, mm-hmm. sometimes we know with union leadership, whatever, but this push around unions and being a part of this, and in fact, I can't see this happening without MTI and the union coming together on this, or am I overstating?
No, I mean, most of the members of the planning team are MTI members, mm-hmm. And Carrie is MTI staff, and I think the union is the right, we're the leader, we should be the leaders of this work, we should be driving this, because nobody becomes a teacher, right, this is, what is it, a trope? Nobody becomes a teacher for the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're the ones who should be thinking about what we do and mm-hmm. making sure that it really is the best thing for all of our kids. And then on top of that, so that personal level, we should be advocating for real change in our schools that is going to be good for all of our kids.
Yeah, I think, you know, we actually changed our mission statement. I'll give you a link for it. And for the first time, it actually, while the work's always existed in our hearts, mm-hmm. it really hasn't been explicitly called out. And, you know, I always say we weren't union people who became teachers, right? We were teachers, and we formed a union. So the union should reflect the passion of the teacher, right? The mission of the teacher. And so to really go back and say, where was that? It's unspoken. Clearly, this can't be unspoken work. It would have been done by now if it could be. So
that's interesting, because that's what I was thinking. Like, it sounds to me, and the more I look at this and see the success of it, and I'll look at Chicago and I'll look at Karen Lewis as that first social justice caucus core right there in that movement, and then Jesse in Seattle, is this the new unionism, this social justice mission behind the work of unionism?
I think it is. I think it's going to be the unions that save public education in the country. Okay. I think that's not overstated at all. We are fighting to keep them public for our kids, for our communities. And I think, you know, the way we look at it is like the three legs of unionism. You know, how much do you need as far as what's in your profession, what's in the schools, and what's in your community? So I think that while we're not abandoning, right, representing our people, that certainly always has to be our mission. But we have explicitly been understanding this has to be said, this has to be done, the work has to be, we've been doing the work. Mm-hmm. We've just been not calling it part of the union work.
Yeah. Chen, anything to add to that? Or
I'll just say I certainly hope that the unions are going to take this on. The seeds of this happening in Madison pretty much happened last year at Labor Notes when a few of us from MTI went and we met teachers from Philly and New York and Minneapolis and Chicago, and they were all talking about the work that they're doing for Black Lives, and it was really inspiring and really exciting because they're all steering their unions towards adopting this. And then I think about how many unions across the country have advocated to have real good things for kids in their contracts. I mean, yeah. Jesse talked about what happened in LA recently, but I think about, I'm pretty sure it's Seattle Teachers Union that has guaranteed recess minutes in the teacher contract.
Right.
Teachers probably do benefit from recess, but that's not who it's for, right?
Right.
That's for kids. That's because that's who we are there for. And I think MTI is going to get there. I think we're going to be... That those are the kinds of things we're going to be not bargaining for, but whatever we can call it now.
Conferring,
advocating.
Hey, it's
for.
A new day in Wisconsin.
That's right.
Right?
We're going to be bargaining.
We're going to be bargaining, and let's bring that back. But so you know, it's a National Week of Action.
Right.
Okay. Classroom action.
So I'm really, my teaching partner and I are going to be pretty much devoting the whole week. It's a 4-day week for kids in Madison because we have PD on Friday. But we're going to be devoting the whole week to teaching about the Black Lives Matter movement, teaching the 13 principles of the movement, teaching about our history, and celebrating. Mm-hmm. And then of course wearing Black Lives Matter at schools t-shirts. And then we have some community events planned, too. The TAA is putting on a panel about the Black Student Strike, and the UW archives are going to be open. Mm-hmm. There are some PTOs across the city that are doing special events for their communities. So Midvale Lincoln is hosting
a movie night.
A screening, mm-hmm. Yeah, 13th? Yeah, the 13th, the documentary about the 13th Amendment.
The public libraries are having movies that week.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah,
so. Hamilton PTO is mm-hmm. sponsoring a movie night. So it's going to be pretty exciting, and hopefully that's going to build on the momentum that everybody felt today, and then hopefully the week will lead into more.
Carrie, what about as a teacher leader and union leader? I mean, where do you see your work during that week?
So my part was sort of to organize and make resources accessible to teachers. We've been talking to the district to really let them know what's going to be happening that week. And so really our work, I think for me, the best place I can be is in schools, I'm hoping, right? To get out there in schools, reading some books with kids, having the conversation. But from a leadership role, it's to make sure that our members have what they need to feel like they can participate, and they are, I would say emboldened, but inspired to participate, and they feel purpose in it, and they feel that we're doing it together. So that week, we will be sort of, we're delivering the shirts that for the beginning of the week, trying to get some posters. I can't make promises, but trying to get posters out to people that week. And really just to make sure that the communication and just the celebration is there.
Yeah, I love that on a celebration note. You know, it's a Jen, Carrie. You guys, as we say on the show, you really did, though. You busted some pencils. Thank you.
Thank you.
Time now for our weekly salute to legendary historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
Human beings are not machines, and however powerful the pressure to conform, they sometimes are so moved by what they see as injustice that they dare to declare their independence. In that historical possibility lies hope.
My thanks to Jesse Agopian and all the teachers that organized and participated in the Teaching for Black Lives event. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for busting pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk, Busted Pencils Radio.